Welcome to the SAG-AFTRA Foundation's Conversations podcast. The SAG-AFTRA Foundation believes that contributions made to our culture by performing arts are not only valuable, but also essential. And so we provide free programming and services like this podcast to support them. If you'd like to learn more about the SAG-AFTRA Foundation or access the full library of our conversations or make a donation to support this podcast, please visit sagaftra.foundation. That's www.sagaftra.foundation. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at SAG-AFTRA-Found. Thanks, and enjoy the conversation.
My guest tonight, Kristen Chenoweth, is an Emmy and Tony Award-winning star who moves effortlessly between stage, screen, television, and voiceover work. She made her Broadway debut in the Cannes Durenev musical Steel Pier, winning the Theatre World Award. She stole the show and won a Tony Award for playing Sally in the musical You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Other stage work includes originating the role of Glinda, the Good Witch, in the hit musical Wicked. Wicked fans here tonight? Roundabout Theatre Company's production of The Apple Tree and as Fran Kubelik in Promises, Promises. On television, she won the Emmy Award for her portrayal of Olive Snook on the ABC series Pushing Daisies. Most recently, she received accolades and two Emmy Award nominations for playing April Rhodes, Matthew Morrison's has-been but lovable ex-flame on Fox's hit comedy series Glee. Glee fans? She also appeared as Annabeth Schott on The West Wing and as Carlene Cockburn on GCB, created by, oh yeah, by Robert Harling, to name a few. On the big screen, Kristen can be seen in the Universal film The Boy Next Door alongside Jennifer Lopez, Running with Scissors opposite Annette Bening, Deck the Halls with Matthew Broderick, RV with Robin Williams, The Pink Panther with Steve Martin, and Hit and Run with Kristen Bell. She has lent her voice to the Sugar Plum Fairy in the animated Lucasfilm fairy tale musical Strange Magic, and Gabby the Poisonous Frog in the hit film Rio 2. She has traveled the world with her concert work, playing such historic venues as Carnegie Hall, the Metropolitan Opera House, the Royal Albert Hall, and the Sydney Opera House. She recently hosted the PBS Arts Fall Festival, which included her own concert performance, Kristen Chenoweth, Coming Home. Oh, yes. Where she performed a career-spanning concert in her hometown of Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. The concert was released as a live CD and DVD and aired as a PBS television special. Her love of theater was the catalyst for her charity partnership with the Broken Arrow Performing Arts Center Foundation in her hometown in Oklahoma, where they named a theater in her honor, the Kristen Chenoweth Theater at the BA PAC. Renamed in 2012 to celebrate its biggest advocate, supporter, and celebrated role model to aspiring hometown performers. In 2009, Kristen wrote an uplifting, candid, comedic chronicle of her life so far in A Little Bit Wicked, which was released by Simon & Schuster and debuted at number 12 on the New York Times hardcover nonfiction bestseller list. Well, Kristen is also a passionate supporter of charities, which dedicates their time and efforts to helping those in need, such as the Kristen Chenoweth Art and Education Fund, the Red Cross, BCEFA, the Point Foundation, ASTEP, Breast Cancer Awareness, Adoption Advocacy, and organizations supporting animal welfare. Well, now she is back on Broadway, dazzling audiences as glamorous film star Lily Garland in On the 20th Century for Roundabout Theatre Company. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kristen Chenoweth. We gave you a pillow in case you wanted it.
I do. I always do. I can't decide. Do I sit on it or use it in my back?
Fabulous. Well, welcome home to Broadway. How does it feel?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Feels like home. Yeah. Exactly what you said. It's home.
You're giving a dazzling performance in 20th Century. How many people see 20th Century?
Come on, people. Come out and see the show.
Well, I know a lot of them have tickets for the show. Good. Where did your love for this show begin, and why did you want this to be your return to Broadway?
Probably when I was a freshman at Oklahoma City University, my voice teacher, my mentor, Florence Birdwell, said to me, there's a show you should do. It's called On the 20th Century. And, you know, like so many times when teachers tell us something, I was like, yeah. Anyway. And then I moved to New York and had some great experiences, and I ended up meeting Comden and Green. I did a song on my first album of theirs called If, from Two on the Isle. And I invited them to the recording session. They were both alive at the time, and I thought, when will you ever get the opportunity? They probably won't come. Well, here they come to the thing. And I got to meet them, and we talked and laughed for a while. And then Adolf looked at me, and he said, there's this show we wrote, and it hasn't been revived because we can't revive it, and we have to have the right person. And it's your part. It's your part. And I said, oh, what is it? He said, On the 20th Century. I go, yeah, my voice teacher told me that at OCU. And he said, no, it's really your part. And then over the years, he just kept saying it. And Betty said, you just have to make us the promise that you'll do it one day. And then, what, 3 years ago, the roundabout said you want to do a reading. And I thought, maybe I should do a reading and see what this is. Because I still, that was my shoe, by the way. That was not my dinner. See, I did it again. Let's just get it out there. So anyway, make a long story longer, I finally did the reading and went, holy crap, yes, I have to do this show. And it was so funny because I did it with Hugh Jackman. We did the reading. I mean, come on, he's so hot, right? And he can sing and he can act. And after the reading was over, he goes, you know, Kristen, I don't have to do this show. Like, it's a great part, but I don't have to do it. You have to do it. And I thought, and I knew it was right. I just knew it was right. All of a sudden, the puzzle went, and then I knew that was going to be the next thing. If I could work it out, that's what I wanted to be. And Scott and I made a promise, the director, and we worked it out.
Well, tell me about living in the world of Lily Garland and what you love about playing her.
Well, I love her clothes.
Yeah. Gorgeous clothes.
I love her clothes. I love, you know, there's certain aspects to her that I certainly can relate to. You know, she's Mildred Plotka, actually, and she is... you know, not really wanting to be a star, but she's skilled and she comes from this little town and becomes a star. And that is a little bit my story, a little bit. And then she's a little bit of a narcissist, so I'd like to think that that's not me. But, you know, I am an actor, and let's face it, if you're actors in here, we're all needy, crazy, and we need, you know, constant. But there's a good crazy and bad crazy. I like to think I'm the good kind. But anyway, she's in love with being a star, and she loves the glamour of it all. And what I also love about playing her is that she's really a theater brat. So she made it in the theater because Oscar discovered her, and she's returning there. And I like the thought of her, you know, she's sold out. You know, when I did kind of a string of those comedies for a while, people were like, why are you doing, you know, Deck the Halls, RV, all those silly Four Christmases. So I'm like, well, because I'm a comedian and it's fun. But I always come back to my roots, which is the theater. And so that's what she's doing. And also the love of her life, you know, is the one that discovered her. And I think all of us probably have a Oscar Jaffe or a Lily Garland in our life that we can recall. So, you know, I certainly do. So it's just, I love it. I love playing her. I really love, it's hard though. Hard.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. This is a very demanding role. I mean, it requires physical comedy, operatic singing, strenuous dancing. I mean, it's nonstop. I'm a second. See, she just finished her end of the week, last performance on Sunday today. I mean, the end of her week. So where do you find the stamina to do this?
I'm going to speak really straight. Everybody knock on wood. I haven't missed a show yet. Go ahead and knock. I'm knocking. Thank you. I'm going to be really honest. It's, I have to eat. I've had issues with that. I'm just going to be really put it out there. I have to eat food. I have to eat protein. I have to sleep constantly. I sleep, I eat, I take a shower, I come warm up, do the show, go to bed, take a bath, get up, don't speak till 3 or 4, warm up, eat. I mean, every time I'm turned around, I'm eating, it feels like. But I have to because I can't get through the show without food. Apparently, you need it to live. So, this isn't LA, people. When I moved out to LA to do, thank you, exactly. When I moved out after Wicked to do Bewitched, it was a huge hit movie. And again, I loved it. But I got to work with Nicole Kidman and Michael Caine, so it doesn't get better than that. And Shirley MacLaine, who told me that I wasn't from this earth. And I was like, where am I from? She's like, you're from blah, blah, blah. And I have no idea what she meant, but I really enjoyed working with her. I did. I loved her. And I'm like, well, I'm happy to work. She's like, it's just a talent like no other. And you're from blah, blah, blah. Okay. But anyway, I realized that apparently in LA, I was not thin. I'm just going to speak truthfully. And I was 10 pounds heavier than I am now. And I didn't know this was going to be the topic for me tonight about weight. But it was apparently came for me to understand that I was. So I went on this kind of the last few years, several years, been sort of, oh, I have to be thinner. Because in LA, you know, it's just a different, like, it's a different thing. And so I did that. And honestly, it wasn't the healthiest choice for me. Because singing is very physical. Obviously, the dancing is too. But I've had to, you know, really change. I say this because we have a lot of actors in the room, right? I say that because it's really important for me to share what I've learned. I'm still learning, especially women. Hear me out. You have to, yes, lead with your looks sometimes and how you, you know, I want to look cute and feel pretty and stuff. I do. I'm a girl. But you have to be healthy and whatever that means to you. And, you know, so whatever you battle, whatever that is, and mine has been that, it's been, this show has got me back to where I need to be health-wise, if that makes sense.
Sure. Because you just do everything. We spoke the other night at Joe Allen. I said you were a triple threat, but you're like a six. What is the word for six? It's not, if you're a triple threat, what is it? What?
Okay. Six.
That's what she is in this show. That's.
I love that.
Yeah. You know, I know when you're.
I'm a sex threat.
You are totally.
Oh my God, Chris cracked myself up.
Well, first of all, what are you sipping on? What is that? That's your Sunday night drink, right?
It's my treat at the end of the week. It's a Coke Slurpee. I just love them. I just love them, and I'm having it. So.
I love it.
Thank you.
I know when you're not working on stage in 20th Century, you're at home resting your voice, and I understand you're obsessed with bad television. Okay, what are some of your favorites?
Dance Moms. Amazing. Abuse and Fabulous. I'm kidding. Okay, Dance Moms, My 600-Pound Life, because I want to help them. I really want to help them. Somehow I don't think they want to hear from me. I don't know. I love My Strange Addiction. I can't stop eating my husband's ashes. I love My Strange Addiction. Oh, Nicole, what else do I love? Like, I have to watch it.
The Real Housewives?
All of them, except Atlanta. Sorry, okay. I can't. But New Jersey. Vanderpump Rules. Love. Pretty much anything on Bravo. I love the new one, Southern Charm. Yeah. Oh, has anybody seen it? It's a little bit like my own upbringing, so it's kind of like a busman's holiday, but I love it still. Let's see. I Survived. I've been stabbed 675 times, and my throat was cut, and somebody chopped my eye out, and I was on a cold mountain, and I lived. I love that. That gives me hope. I'm like, if they can do that, I can do 8 shows a week.
Thank you. I love it. This is such a beautiful score by Cy Coleman, Betty Comden, and Adolph Green. What is it like singing these songs?
For me as a soprano, you know, there's always the joke that sopranos don't do, you know, we don't do harmony. We just do the melody. But it's kind of true. But to be in a show where I'm actually doing what I was trained for, lots of people know me as a belter, which cracks me up because my training was opera. My master's in opera performance. So I'm getting to sing in a very comfortable, albeit still having to sleep and no speak and all that. But it is a joy to sing. And it's almost like it is from another time, but it's operetta. Oh, it's so fun. Yeah. It's hard, though. Again, I'm going to say, let's do the tally like they do on Bravo. How many times do they say the word sex? And then they do one, two, three. So it's hard. Now that's twice. I've said it. Now three times.
We'll keep a tally. Working with Scott Ellis again and Warren Carlyle, what makes them such a great team?
No egos.
There isn't.
Yeah. There's no ego. Like, Warren will help with a scene, and Scott will say that step's kind of, I think it could be, they have no, they interweave, and there's no ego. In fact, at the, you know, they say the fish head of the stink started, whatever, what is it? The fish?
Yeah.
The fish stinks at the head? See, the head, yeah. Okay, something about fish and stinking. Ours is in a positive way.
Exactly.
Okay, and so the flower smells. Yeah. I don't know what I'm trying to make an analogy, but it starts so at the top.
Yeah.
And so Peter and I, when we were working in rehearsal with Warren and Scott, and we just saw how, we were like, we have to keep this. And then when they go away, we have to make sure. And so I think as actors, you know, you watch others, and you watch how other they treat other people, from the crew to wardrobe to, these are all, you have to see them and care. And this is, I'm not patting myself, I have a lot of flaws. Oh, believe me, so many. But one thing is, I love people.
Yeah.
For the most part. Some people I don't, but most people I do. And I think that Peter does too, and I think that Scott and Warren, you know, we just have a good, but they have no ego. There's no ego in our show. It's heaven.
It looks like the happiest family up there from everybody working on that show.
I'm just like, yeah. What's really, where's the other shoe gonna, no.
No shoes dropping.
No.
Yeah. Brilliant cast. I mean, look who, I mean.
Great.
Peter.
Andy Carl. Michael McGrath, Mark Lambaker, Mary Louise Wilson, who is a masterclass. If you, thank you. You should just go, I sometimes watch her in the wings. Yeah. I'm memorizing the part because I know I'm not far from playing that role someday. And I'm like, wow, this is a career.
Yeah.
This is a great, and she's getting ready to have a book come out, and she snuck me a copy, and I read it in 2 days. I was like, it was like water in a desert. Crack. I couldn't get enough of it. And I learned, you know, the basic thing we forget as actors is, my acting teacher used to always say, acting is reacting. Okay. Mary Louise does this class where she's talking to young actors who seem very reluctant. I think there's a part of us that are reluctant, right? That don't want to give everything that we have and are scared to go there. She asks the question, why? What are you afraid of? And I don't know. There's a lot to learn from people who've lived and who have experienced everything from the third witch in Hamlet to writing her own piece, so, you know, full gallop to that. Yeah. So I just respect it. I respect it.
Beautiful cast. Just beautiful,
and the ensemble. Each person has a character. I sat in the back watching the opening because I don't come on for 20 minutes. And I'm watching it. And I went early and watched it again. And it had been a while. And I started crying because I thought, every single person.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's like, hello, performance. No one's phoning me.
All of them are brilliant. You know, the comedy scenes are so brilliant in this show, especially the ones between you and Andy Carl. Did you perfect those once the audience was brought into the mix? Because it's all that split timing.
Yeah, we did. You know, it's so hard without an audience. You know, they tell us what they want, and we have to listen. And I just, day one, after I could figure out I really could trust him, I just said, just use me as a prop. Use me as a prop. And by day three, he was like, so I can throw you up against the wall? I'm like, absolutely. You know, you just trust somebody and go there with them. But once the audiences came, he and I really found our rhythm. And we found what really was funny and what was too much.
Yeah.
And what doesn't, you know. One thing that we're learning now, it's this interesting note even today that I noticed. Well, you know how you judge the audience. Maybe you don't, but I'm like, I hate them. So sometimes they're quiet. Really, they're nice. They're just quiet. But they were... They were like church mouse. I'm like, I'm trying not to judge. But I realized today, guess what, Kristen? Pace. Remember that word? Remember that you're now waiting for some of it. Stop that. And at the end, they, of course, leapt to their feet. They were quiet. The church mouse is the whole thing. And I thought, see, you don't need all that. Oh, they didn't laugh on that one. Forget that. First of all, that means you're not in the play. But it's just, you know, how you start running a show for a long time and then, I don't know, you guess it's so interesting.
Because I think you expect it in certain places, and when you don't get it, you're like, what's wrong today?
Exactly. Right? Or a new spot. And you're like, That's not even funny. Again, they tell us, right?
Yeah. Just brilliant. Thanks. I want to go back to the beginning. How old were you when you first realized you had this God-given singing voice?
Doesn't it feel like you and I are going back in time?
We're going back
you
in
were,
time.
You interviewed me when, what year, 19?
I first met her. We're going to get into Steel Pier. I went to the rehearsal room. No one knew who this woman was. We were invited. They ran four numbers, and we got to meet the cast that day. And I looked around this rehearsal room, and I knew Stroman, and I knew Scott Ellis, and I knew everybody in the show. And I saw this beautiful girl just sitting there and working that opening number. I thought to myself, who is that? And I've always said, we've had a very good eye with people in this business when I look at someone, but I fell in love with you that day, like in that rehearsal studio on 56th Street, right?
I can't believe you remember that.
Yeah, I remember that day. I remember everything about that.
I was such a baby.
She was a baby then, but I knew then. I was like, who is that?
And I never forgot it. Yeah.
I mean, we're sitting here today.
You.
Look at this. Well, I
know.
Love
this. Okay, what was the question? I'm sorry.
I have no idea. Oh. How old were you when you realized you had this God-given voice?
Okay, so I remember my mom, we had the record players back then, you guys. They were round things that you put the thing on, they played. So anyway, thank you. So she played Wizard of Oz, which is interesting, given my history with that story. I often think about Liza, too. Like, wow, she must have a lot of Wizard of Oz, and you know, when she came to see Wicked, she was like, oh my, of course. But anyway, but I would listen to Wizard of Oz on the record player. And like many young girls, I remember hearing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and I remember hearing that voice, Judy Garland. And my parents are chemical engineers, and they're not singers. I was actually adopted, and they're, you know, we have a lot in common, but music is not one of them. They don't play an instrument. They can't. They shouldn't. but one thing they did is they loved music. So when I would say, I guess I was really, really little, and they'd say, here, listen to this, Count Basie, for example. I love Count Basie because my dad loved it. My dad also loved Mel Brooks movies, which is why I think I loved Fell in Love with Madeline Kahn and didn't even know she did this on the 20th century originally. But given music, my parents loved classical music. And growing up in Oklahoma, this is unique. I also studied classical piano my whole life, and they were really great about saying, what are your interests? And you want to take piano? You want to do ballet? Okay. That's exactly how I feel. Okay. Exactly. That's how I felt when the audience today. I was like, anyway, I started singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow with her. And my parents said that I would sing myself to sleep at night. And in the living room, they said, is it us? She'd be pretty good, right? And then they said, you want to do church choir? Because we were at church all the time. So I went and tried out for a solo in the adult group. Because I thought, well, why can't I go? Exactly. She's warming up. She's warming up. You don't have to leave. I don't mind it. I love it. A little nugget. You little nugget. Aww. So cute. Oh, I didn't see. This is a problem being a woman. I'm like, oh. Okay. So anyway, bring it back. So, God, I'm just rambling. It's because I'm jacked up on this.
I love it.
I'm jacked up on this. So anyway, I got this part. I sang this solo church thing at age 8. And I remember the congregation, which in the South, you know, we have humongous churches. People just stood. And I remember the song was, I'm only 4'11", but I'm going to heaven, and it makes me feel 10 feet tall. Not kidding. Oh. I'm not kidding. That's the name of the song. If I'd only known that's exactly how tall I was going to grow, I would have chosen a different song. But I sang it, and they just stood, and I knew that I was going to do, and then ballet, and I just always was an actor. I didn't even know about singing. I was just an actor, you know.
So what originally got you to New York? Because you were going to study opera here?
I was going to go to Philadelphia. Thank you, AVA. Thank you. God, thank you. I can't remember anything anymore. And I was going to go there, and I had a full scholarship, and I came to New York with my friend Denny Downs, my bestie, and I just went like for a week vacation, and I went to an audition with him at the Equity Building, and he'd gotten his Equity card the summer before, and I was not eligible or whatever, so I waited out in the lobby, and I signed up to audition for just show at Paper Mill. I thought, it doesn't matter. I just want to experience it and see what it's like. This is where people start looking at me like... But I didn't know what I didn't know, and I ended up getting a part in this show. I just ended up getting a part, and I had to decide opera or musical theater. What are you going to do? Because you have AVA over here, and then you have, you know, it wasn't Broadway. It was Paper Mill Playhouse, Animal Crackers, a Marx Brothers show.
Sure. Yeah.
And I just was like, Mom and Dad, I think I just want to do this Paper Mill Playhouse. They're like, what is that? I'm like, I don't know. I just know I want to do this thing. And they're like, but the full scholarship, and they only take like 7 people, 8 people a year. And like one of my judges was Placido Domingo, and he was like that, and we've maintained a really close friendship and sung together many times. But he, you know, you have to love it. Just like, and I think for me, I've always been an actor first. So I just knew I wanted to go do this, and I did it, and that's how it happened. And then I got an agent because the New York Times came and reviewed that show.
Oh, yes.
And all of a sudden, I was getting, this is again where people are like, I didn't understand that doesn't happen like that now. I have different challenges. Trust me. But I didn't understand. So I had a couple meeting with agents, and the agent that I went with was Mark Rajdanti at Bauman, Rajdanti & Scholl at the time. And he said, or it was actually called Bauman Hiller. And he said, one agent said, this is important. One agent said, you're more really a dancer who sings. And another agent said, you're really a leading lady, but you're trapped in this. You have this funny voice. And then another agent, Mark, said, you're everything. You can do a lot of things. That's good. I said, so you don't really think I'm just a dancer who sings? You don't really think I'm? And they said, no. And that's who I went with. And that's how I got. And that I will always be indebted to Bauman Hiller, a.k.a. Bauman, Rajdanti & Scholl, BRS now, because they said that to me.
Yeah.
They did that. They gave me faith, you know?
Because you made your Broadway debut in the Candor and Ebb musical, Steel Pier. What did that show and that role mean to you?
Everything, because again, when you go back and listen to the CD, it's an aria. And John and Fred wrote an aria, because the audition called for a tall, leggy blonde who can sing a high C. And Mark Rajdanti sent me in. He was like, you're not tall, but you should go in. I thought, great. So I walk in, hi. I wore probably these. And I did a Victor Herbert aria, which went far above a high C. I made sure of it. I thought, whatever I lack for in height, I'll sing in the note. And then they asked me to read a scene, Scott Ellis. And then he said, okay, thank you. I leave. I was convinced it wasn't going to happen. And by this time, I'd read the scene. It was so top secret. No one had read the script. And I knew this was my part. It was all about Eve. Sort of, her name was Precious. And I knew this was my part, and she had to dance really well, and you had to really, and a week goes by. And by this time, I was packing my bags. I was like, I'm done. By the way, no, you don't get to be done after a year or two. And my parents met me at the Olive Garden, and we were talking. I love the Olive Garden. And we were talking about, I'm dead serious. We were talking about giving up. And my dad said, well, because I had been working. I was off Broadway doing Fantastics for $180 a week. And he said, Christian, you're working. Why? So what? This is my part. No, I know it. This is my part. I get a call back, and I walk in, and there's John Kander and Fred Ebb sitting there. And then I was like, uh-oh. I'm nervous. And then I sang, and they were like, okay. No, but that was the reaction. Okay. And then Susan Stroman taught me a little dance and had me come back in with all tall women. Every tall person in the city was at the audition. I didn't know it at the time, but they were auditioning for ensemble, which was, you know, everybody. And there I was. And there she was teaching in front. I could not see her. I had to raise my hand, which she didn't see. And I finally was like, hello, hello. And finally some people were like, was there talking? And someone goes, oh, that girl. I was like, I can't see you. And oh, isn't that so cute? Come on up. So I come up, and I learn the routine, and then the next day I get the call that I'm going to play this role, and it changed my life, and it changed my world, and it began a relationship with Stroman and Scott Ellis that has lasted to this day. I can really talk, can I?
I love it.
Aren't you bored?
It's one of my favorite shows. Ken or never my favorite. So, I mean, I love them. So, for you to be a part of them.
You know,
so,
on this thing, yeah, I have
we're gonna get into
so many Ken or Neb. Ken or Neb to me are kind of it. I love their lyric. I love the melody. And John Kander was like, he was writing Two Little Words, which if you haven't heard the CD to Still Pure, you should listen to it because I think it was ahead of its time and I think it's a beautiful score. But that 8 times a week, if I'd known how hard it was, I would have never done it. High E, 16 count, runs, I mean, and dancing, I didn't even know it was hard. I was like, yes. Now I'm like, I don't even know if I got the high. I'm so, you know, I'm older. I'm older.
But now you're doing it now.
Barely. I'm so tired.
Okay, the role of Sally in the musical You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown? Oh, yeah. Was a big career changer for you, wasn't it? So, I mean, you won every conceivable award for that show. You won the Tony, the Drama Desk, the OCC, and you had the choice of doing two shows, right? She could have either have done You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, or Annie, Get Your Gun. What made you say yes to Charlie Brown?
Again, but... Here's why. Charlie Brown, there were 6 people in it. And Annie Get Your Gun starred my favorite star, Bernadette Peters. This is always a little fork in the roads for me in my life. I don't know what that is. But I think it's to remind me and to tell you to remember to listen to your inside voice. Not the others that talk to you. But the inside one. And for me, it's God. But whatever that means to you. So my inside voice was saying, Charlie Brown, Charlie Brown, Charlie Brown. And I didn't even know what part because the director said, you're going to audition. If you take this job, it's not for Peppermint Pat. It's not for Patty, which was an amalgamation of all the girls who aren't Lucy. I can't tell you yet what it is because I have to get it cleared. So you just have to take the job on faith. And then I have my favorite star in the world, Bernadette Peters, and I would play the supporting character. I think character's name is Winnie, which I had done in Summer Stock. I was like, okay, I already know that. But I knew Winnie was going to be a ton of dancing. I was like, so anyway, I was really thinking about it, and I just kept that inner voice. And again, Mark Redanti, he was like, when I made the decision, he goes, wow, I'm surprised. The easier thing would have been job security, Bernadette Peters. But you're doing this, and I think that's wise. I think that you're listening. I said, I don't know why I have to do it. And then first day of rehearsal, still didn't know what part I was going to play. I show up, and everybody at their little place at the table, you know, when you do the read-through, they had like Charlie Brown hat. There's Anthony Rapp, little book of all Charlie Brown. Lucy, there's Alana Lane, Roger Barton. And for me, it said Sally. And he goes, see? And I go, Charlie Brown's little sister? And he goes, yeah, that's you. And I was like, what? So Charles Schulz had said yes. And it wasn't, that's just one of those weird, like crazy. Yeah.
Because that was a hard choice to make. When I heard this about you, I was like.
Oh, I cried.
Yeah.
I prayed. I was like, oh, Lord, please, please don't let this be. You know, Craig Bierko was offered a pilot once called Friends and another one called Best Friends. And he chose Best Friends. I was like, please don't let this be a Craig Bierko situation. I hope he's not mad at me that I just told that story.
No, but, you know, Judith Light was here, and she said the same thing during pilot season. She was offered 2 or 3 different shows, and one was Who's the Boss, and nobody wanted this show.
What?
Nobody wanted the show. And she's like, oh, I like that role more than anything. And she was going to be with Tony Danza. We're going to do this, and look what happened. So it's like I said, you have to listen to those voices of just
even
saying.
Even if it's a big bomb. Yeah. Ask me how many bombs I've been in. I mean, let's get the list out. Okay. But I'm not sad about it. I'm not sad about it. I love every
part. You learn from everything. If you're smart enough, which I know you are, you learn from the bombs, right?
Yes.
Or the things that aren't as successful as they should
Correct.
Be.
Correct. I don't even like that word. I use it. But honestly, some of my best work have been in shows that didn't run.
I love that.
I'm both on TV and on the stage.
Well, in Charlie Brown, tell me about working with composer Andrew Lippa and how he came up with your show-stopping number, My New Philosophy.
Well, they told me that I was going to get a song. Excuse me, Sally was going to get a song. Let's not get confused here. And I was like, wonder what it'll be. Like, I'm Charlie Brown's little sister. And I noticed that Sally had a lot of, she was sophisticated in her humor. And which made me nervous because I thought, oh, please don't sell this as a kiddie show, which I love kids. But I didn't want people to think they were coming to the theme park. I wanted this to be, you know, Shakespeare. It's not. Let's just be honest. But they're little vignettes. And one of the things that Andrew noticed after reading all the vignettes, and we both did. He's like, you never notice how Sally always has a new philosophy? I know. I said, I know. She has a new philosophy for this, a new philosophy. Today, my new philosophy is. And he goes, that's going to be the song, my new philosophy. And that's the song was born. I know. Okay. He's a genius, and I love him.
Oh, yeah. Scene. I'm right with you there, totally.
Love him, love him, love him.
Okay, the night of the Tonys, what do you remember about that night? Because you had just done the number and had to change?
I had so many seconds. I mean, like, so I felt like it was three. Somebody said, well, I counted them as 45. Okay, 45, three, doesn't matter. I had to change from Sally Brown, which, let's be honest, she's five. And I thought, if I do win, I don't want to wear the unibra. I want to be a woman. You know what I mean? I want to look like I'm at least 30, you know? So Rosie, I was on her show, and she heard about, she goes, I hear you're not going to be able to. I said, Tommy Hilfiger designed a dress for me, and I'm not going to get to really wear it because, you know, if I win, I won't get, you know. And she said, I'll get you a dresser. And we had two dressers backstage, and we did it. And the secret is that I put on another wig that looked like my hair.
Oh.
But you know what? I really didn't know that it was going to happen. I would never presume that. But if it did, I wanted to look cute, right? I wanted to look cute.
You
so,
looked gorgeous.
Thank you. I remember, that's what I remember the most, is like I made it. I made the change.
You have no idea where your speech was, but you were like, I look like Kristen.
I never do any of that. I never want to plan. Tonight, they sent me, you know, questions, and I don't ever want to know because it's just more better for me if I don't.
You are known to legions of fans as Glinda in one of the most popular musicals of all time, Wicked. Wicked fans? So looking back, favorite memories of that show?
God, the day that I saw the bubble. The day that I saw that bubble that he designed, and I thought, I get to ride that sucker, you know? And I thought, I'll never have a better entrance in my career. I don't care what happens. I come down in a bubble and say, it's good to see me, isn't it? You don't have a better entrance than that. I think there might have been tears that day because I just thought, wow, you know, we had done maybe 2 years of workshops and readings of it, and I don't know, just seeing the set and seeing it all come together after all that time and money that they, frankly, that, you know, Universal was smart enough to put in. And I don't know, it was very special to see. That's always my favorite day, is when we get to the theater and see the set.
But I mean, working with Stephen Schwartz on that, I mean, just what a beautiful score he gave you for that.
I know. And, you know, I love Popular. I should thank, I get down on Kiss's feet whenever I see him. But there's another song in the show that I'm thinking about sort of putting in my concert, I'm trying to figure out how to do it. It's called I Couldn't Be Happier. Yes. And I remember, excuse me, it's that. But remember when I first heard it and it was switching time signatures from 5/8 to 2/4 to... It was difficult, but it was also emotionally difficult because you think one thing of Glinda, and then there's her journey too, which is who's really the evil one? And hopefully I think at the end you think Glinda grew probably the most because of where she started out so surfacey. Really, I love the story. I love it so much because it's about two girls with their own insecurities, one who seemingly has it all together and one who clearly has – she's green and she's, you know, different. She's different. And I loved how Deanna and I were able to find the insecurities of both and sort of go there. I think that's the secret to that show. Yeah. That's the secret. And, you know, it wasn't originally, it was Elphaba and Madame Morrible. And I had just gotten called from Stephen Schwartz, will you do this? It's only one song. It's cute. And I'm okay. And I went and did it. And then it wasn't me. He's just like, I feel like there's something more there with Glinda and Elphaba. And then over time it became, you know, sort of the Glinda and Elphaba and with Glinda, like their friendship. Isn't that interesting?
Isn't it wonderful working on a new project that starts out as something totally different, but you're a part of the whole process being an original cast member, when that role will always be yours because it was created for you. You will always be the first.
It's crazy.
Isn't it wild?
It's been 11 years.
Has it really?
Can you? So I had a fight with a lady in Duane Reade the other day. She said, I saw you a couple years ago as Glinda. I said, no, that wasn't me. She goes, yeah, like 3-4 years ago. No, it wasn't me. It was. You were there. You had the crown on. You had the wand. It was you. I said, it wasn't me. It's been 11 years. I'm arguing with her. Don't argue with people. Just go, okay, thanks.
Thank you.
But yeah, 11 years.
Wow, time does fly.
What?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I'll never, you know, I prayed about that show because I'm from the Bible Belt. And so my mom was like, I had just a show called Wicked. Are you sure Wicked? You know, she had like, you know, we don't even do therapy in Oklahoma. It's like, ooh. you know, it's like, it's almost looked at, of course, now I love therapy and it's a requirement for me. But, but you know, in Oklahoma, it's like you deal with things privately and you don't, you know, it might be, is that witchcraft? What is it? But I remember just trying to explain to her, it's the Green Witch and how she becomes wicked. And there's Glinda and she's like, well, okay, now okay, I can sort of understand that. And I don't know, it was just, I prayed about this show. I was like, I want a show that was like a Les Mis. Because that was what I listened to growing up. Les Mis, Les Mis. I wore it out. And Phantom, I wore it out. My poor brother, it was like, can we put on some Randy Jackson? Can we put on some, you know, Trisha Yearwood? I'm just sick of hearing Phantom of the Opera. Oh, who cares about a guy in a mask? Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? I wore it out. And then Wicked, I had a feeling, even though the critics were a little bit, I knew, I said, it's going to make a mark in this world of musical theater. And I'm so proud of it. I'm proud that I was a part of it. I'm glad I got the part. I'm thankful every day. And even with the Duane Reade people, I'm thankful that I can even have the argument with them.
Sure. Oh, I love that. Another one of your show-stopping performances was in the Bach and Harnack musical, The Apple Tree. Oh, yep.
Thank you. How about that show?
Another tour de force show, right?
So hard. So
three roles, four roles, four, right?
Four roles.
Yeah, because you got Daisy.
Right, yeah. My favorite act one of any time, of all time, is Mark Twain, Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
The Diaries of Adam and Eve. And Bach and Harnack putting it to paper. And the difference between man and woman. Or how about just this relationship? The very first relationship. Well, we think, you know, I think. But I just loved it so much. It was so hard and so rewarding. They were trying to get me to do it at the Encores, and Sheldon and Jerry were at dinner with me with Gary Griffin, and they were talking to me about it. I said, I don't know the actor. I don't know these shows. Shame on me. I spent all my time doing opera, so I didn't know. I know musical theater. I'm embarrassed to say it. I didn't. I knew Oklahoma because I'd done it 55 times in Oklahoma. So, I think we did a little Abner as well. So there you go. And Fiddler, which is completely wrong, but we did it. And I played Hoddle. I remember putting on body makeup and I looked like Janet Jackson. I got a really curly black wig. I should stop talking. Anyway, once we did it at Encores, and I fell in love with the piece and it got great reviews and people loved it. They moved it to the Roundabout and I was just so thankful. That was another part that I remember being happy, like really truly happy. Because it was hard. So hard. I love hard.
Four roles, like you said.
Yeah, Eve.
Yeah.
Princess Barbara. She's crazy. Ella, the chimney sweep, and Passionella.
Who was your favorite? Was it Passionella?
Eve.
Eve, oh, I got it. Well, that's a beautiful song. That song they wrote.
I can't. Oh, I'm really.
But to wear Passionella.
Oh yeah, come on.
It was pretty crazy, right?
It was like Jane Mansfield.
Yeah, totally Jane
Loved
Mansfield.
Loved it.
You know, I was with director Michael Mayer.
With the head.
With the head. Gordon.
Oh, she did. She said it. Go on.
Totally.
Go on.
I was with director Michael Mayer the other day at the Lambs Club. And for Hedwig, and he said to me, I had the best time in this room when it was a theater because Kristen did the workshop of Thoroughly Modern Millie with Bea Arthur, right?
Yes.
And
was it here?
It was at the Lambs Theater. It's now a restaurant, but he said in that theater, and that's where we did the meet and greet for Hedwig the other day. And Michael said, Richie, I have the fondest time sitting in this room because of that workshop that you did of Thoroughly Modern Millie with Bea. What was it like working with Bea Arthur?
Guess. Amazing.
Yeah.
First of all, her voice, I was so jealous of it because there's so many balls in there. Just so many balls. And just, and I, you know, I was always like, are you okay? She's like, this is how I talk. We really got on.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it showed in the parts. And she looked like with one, just one look, she was going to eat me. And I just, I loved her. I feel lucky that I got to have the experience of Thoroughly Modern Millie and with her.
Yeah.
We had a great little cast. It's interesting you bring that up. I can't believe, and I just haven't thought about it in so long. That was another fork in the road thing because there was that, the big hit sitcom, Kristen,
yeah.
And and Millie, and I had to decide, do you want to do television show or do you want to do Thoroughly Modern Millie? And it was coming off Charlie Brown. That was a tough one. Because Millie, again, it's a part that doesn't come along very often. And it was new because it had been the movie. And it was a tough one.
Yeah.
But the part went to the right person. And then I got to have the experience that I got to experience. It was all the right. Things always happen the way they're supposed to, I believe.
Because your TV series, which is hilarious.
Thank you. You're the one that saw it.
I'm the one who saw it. But I always, I've had many people here, Stocker Channing, Andrea Martin, everyone who first started out with a TV series. What did you take away from that experience?
Cash. No, I'm kidding.
Good. That's what they all know, totally. You're the fourth person who's told me that. Seriously.
Experience of learning about cameras.
Yeah.
Experience of learning about four cameras and kind of just... That I'd never done it, y'all. I mean, I just never had done it. And so, and that was kind of, sitcoms were just starting to kind of, now they're, you know, with Big Bang and all, they kind of like, you know, come, I guess they're kind of back.
Yeah.
But there right then, it was like, it was kind of starting to go down. But I got the experience of learning about camera.
Everybody told me that. Did you grasp it right away coming from the theater world?
I did, and I think part of the reason is we had a live audience. And since I'm such a creature of the audience, and it felt like theater to me, only dialed down a little bit. And also, what I then also remembered, realized is, don't worry too much about the cameras. Just be the part. And it's called Kristen. You can't really F that up, can you? If you do, then you really suck. But I remember the day they told me they were going to call it Kristen, and I was on the lot of Paramount, and it was the same stage as next door to Frasier. And I thought, I'm going to barf. I'm going to be sick. Please don't call it Kristen. There are all kinds of – I thought it should be called Sweet and Low, which looking back, I'm so glad nobody listened to me. Because there was like a Donald Trump-type character, John Tenney, who just was at the show the other night. But I don't know. It was a great – experience for me to understand that we did 13 episodes, and then the man that was at the head of NBC was moved on, and the new person inherited Kristen. And it wasn't really his thing, right? And I started to learn how things go and how really, you know, people can think you're talented and nice and all that stuff, but really it's just, a lot of it is timing. A lot of it is just, how much crap have you seen on TV too? Crap, right? I mean, I watch it. So, but there's shows that make it that you just don't know. And somebody, you know, I think about Seinfeld, and they have how Warren Littlefield fought and fought and fought and fought and kept that sucker on the air. You know, that thing was off the air a couple times, wasn't it, Richie?
Yeah, sure.
And they just kept putting it on. And look, it's one of the best shows of all time. So I'm glad when shows get their shot. How's that?
Yeah, beautiful. But you were great in that, and there was more
Thank
than
you
watching that.
Thank you, Will. Thank you.
I know there are a few dream roles you'd like to play. Tammy Faye Baker. Wouldn't she be dynamite?
Thank you. Oh my God, I love you for bringing that up.
Okay.
I love
Henry
Tammy
Krieger,
Faye.
Tell me.
Okay, so Darren promises.
Yeah.
Henry Krieger calls me up, and you take that call, and he said, "Can you come over? I have a proposition. And so I get done with the show and I go over there, and there's him and Bobby Longbottom, and they pull out this piece, Tammy Faye Baker. And they don't give me the script yet. They start playing some of the music. And all I'm going to say is, There's one song called Telephones for Jesus. It's so good. The music is just, forget about it. Still tweaking the script because, you know, I'm crazy and I know they're good, crazy good, that they want to make it just right so that when we present it to the world, it's ready. So we're still working on it. And luckily with that role, I still have a few, you know, I don't have to like do that tomorrow. I can age into that some more because I think a true classic woman is ageless. And Tammy Faye, as just like Dolly Parton, those are people that are ageless. Like you don't see them going, oh, they aged out. Wah, wah. No, they just stay this, you know, they're, what age was Tammy?
I have no idea.
Exactly.
See? Exactly.
Same like Dolly.
Yeah.
Like Dolly Levi.
Dolly Levi. You want to do that too, right?
Someday I do, perfect. Yeah. But, you know, again, ageless. Had to decide Dolly or on the 20th century. Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
And everybody was like, you should do Dolly. And I said, and they, the way they presented it to me was so cool. Like, oh, we're going to make her the young sex. I was like, they're trying to get me to do it because they're trying to, you know, make me feel good. But the truth is Dolly is ageless.
Yes.
Lily Garland is not ageless. So, plus, she's off. She's an oddball and off, Lily Garland. It's more appropriate for me.
You were brilliant as Fran Kubelik in Promises, Promises.
Thank
Promises?
You. Thank you. Such a great score. Backrack, backrack.
Well, I was going to say to you, your take on her in this was like Angie Dickinson, Lee Remick, those beauties of the 60s, especially in the second act when you're in with the moon coming from the window. We were sitting there, and I said to myself, wow, this is such an homage to those glamorous girls of the 60s. What was it like living in the world of Bacharach, Hal David, and Neil Simon?
Thanks for asking that question. I'm going to try to do this brief. After The Apple Tree, you play four roles. After Wicked, it's an iconic part. After Charlie Brown, what do you do? What do you do as an actor? And most comics know that really we have our drama in our life and sadness and like, because we're human. And Promises came across to me. Sean Hayes and Rob Ashford were calling saying, I had just won the Emmy for Pushing Daisies. And of course, the whole team was like, you got to do TV and more TV and movies. And here comes Promises. And I'm thinking, I think I want to do Promises, Promises. And they're like, ugh, because, you know, Fran is described originally as kind of a mousy. I mean, she has an affair with a married man who won't leave his wife, and she ends up trying to take her life. Kristen Chenoweth, right? So, but that's exactly why I did it. And working with Neil and Bert, you know, Bert Bacharach, he actually made a comment to me. I reminded him of Angie Dickinson. He said, "And Angie." And I was like, oh, I wonder who that is. Later I realized, must mean Angie Dickinson. But, you know, again, criticized for doing a dramatic part because nobody really wants you to, they want you to step outside the box, but they don't really. And I just remember thinking, opening night, my mom, my dad, mom, I'm going to get emotional. We're in backstage and there's a lot about Fran that I relate to. And I knew I had to do the part. And my dad said, because I know you, Kristen, I know there's a lot of, I know this is a lot of you too. I know. And it doesn't matter what the critics say because it was very mixed. And even like, why would she do this? And, you know, we want to see her be funny. And my dad said, if no one had heard of you or ever seen you be funny, you might be who knows, you could have been a revelation, right? But nobody wants, Kristen, you do this for you. This is why, and it was that voice again. And I really grew into the part. And I noticed myself really, now with that came a really difficult time because Fran is, you know, she has hope. And then she loses hope. And, you know, to live in that 10 months, and I even extended the show. I was supposed to leave after 6, but I wanted to stay because I wasn't done with her. And my people were like, what? But, you know, when you know when it's time. And it just wasn't time yet. Wasn't time. Remains, again, a great company. Sean Hayes is one of my besties of my whole life. And getting to do that with him, you know, it was a real dream. And to sing Bacharach while he's alive, saying, while Hal David was alive, going, house is not a home, has a whole new meaning. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Promises will always be one of my most proud for me as an actor. And I would do another one like that. I just don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. Man, I think it's Tammy Faye is going to be a hybrid of... Tammy Faye was very... She had a crappy time of it.
Yeah. Well, you were a revelation in that show. I thank you for choosing Promises, Promises.
Thank you. Right? And thank you for being one of the people that got it.
Oh, totally.
Because I know that there was... And you know what? People, actors, you know, we want people to love us, and they want people to think we're right for the role. The truth is, you have to believe it.
Yeah.
And I did.
And you were.
And I loved it. And people are like, why didn't you be Mousy? And you should have on a little uniform and brown hair. I'm like, no. No, it's a different, I'm looking at it, this can happen to anyone. You can fall in love no matter how you look, what size you are, how short, how tall. A strong woman. Independent, fall in love with a guy who's not available to you for whatever reason. I don't know.
People do.
Hello.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that story. Well, let's get into some of your vast film and TV work. Olive Snook, Pushing Daisies, Emmy Award winner. You love that role, right? She's one of your all-time favorites. Tell me.
I love her. I love her haircut. Yeah. I remember after the pilot, I said, we had the pilot and then we reshot of it. We shot a lot of it because then we're like, we really have something good here. We should maybe put some more money into it. And I asked Brian Fuller if I could cut my hair. And I said, you know, Barbara Streisand. He's like, I'm in. So I did the haircut. And I had this, you know, I wanted to be the fashion queen on the show. But the truth is, I play Olive Snook in the pie hole. And I had this one uniform that zipped up. And I decided she would have cleavage. And that, you know, that girl next door that you just always like, why is she single? Poor thing. Kind of how I am in my own real life. That's exactly who Olive is. And why is she wasting her time being sad about this guy? And why doesn't he see her? And he can't touch her. It's just the perfect. And of course, Brian Fuller knows how to write. So that's the key. Olive Snook is my favorite.
Yeah. Such a great series and so wacky when you think about it. When you were first approached, what did you think?
Okay, I got the pilot. Barry Sonnenfeld was the director, and I had just done RV with him, and he was like, I really want you to do this part. And I did exactly what every actor in the world does. I looked through to see how many scenes I was in. And if you don't, you're lying to me right this second. Thank you. So I noticed that I was in 3 scenes, and 1 I didn't speak. I just was with a dog. And I started over and I read the script and I went, holy crap, I don't care if I have 1 word to say. And then they started describing the look of it, and Brian Fuller called me. He goes, trust me, I'm going to take care of Olive. Don't you worry, her story is going to be revealed. I said, is she just going to be the waitress? Because if that's the truth, I'd rather just, but then he started describing the look of it and I read the script and he's so musical in his writing. And I just went on blind faith, and I was supposed to do Young Frankenstein again. See?
Right.
See? The forks in the road. So I had done the reading of Young Frankenstein, the workshop, and we were doing, and then I got Pushing Daisies, and they were happening at the exact same time, so I had to make that decision. That was a tough one. That was a tough one.
Again, a good one, though. I just think, you know, either would have been great, but
yeah.
The point is, all of a character, and you won an Emmy.
Those
are big,
that's
right?
That's cray-cray.
The Emmys,
are... Yeah. They're this tall as this table is, and they're heavy. Heavy.
Where do you keep it? Because they're big.
I keep it at my theater in Oklahoma.
Okay, we're going to get into that too. Well, let's get into that next. A theater named after her. How great is that? Let's get into the theater. What was that like? I mean, the honor of having that happen for you.
We didn't have the Broken Arrow Performing Arts Center growing up.
Yeah.
I had to go to Tulsa, which in my world, that was 15 minutes away. They built the Performing Arts Center, and maybe 3 years ago, they called and said, we want to name the theater after you. And I always talk over things with my dad because he's a business guy and I trust him. I said, Dad, can you believe they're going to do that? Am I old enough? Are they sure? Da, 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 da. And he said, Kristen, all I know is if you say okay, which why wouldn't you? You have to take that responsibility. And you have to figure out what you want that legacy to be. That's all I'm going to tell you. If you never want to go there and perform, that's going to be your prerogative. But you would be ashamed. I would be ashamed if you did that. And it stuck with me. So on tour, my last stop was the Broken Arrow, the Kristen Chenoweth Theater. And, you know, at this point in my life, you look out into the audience and you see your voice teacher, you see your church people, friends, you see your pom-pom girls, you see your ex-boyfriends who are now with men, you see... He helped me pick out my prom dress. He was the best. We were best friends. I didn't know. But I'll tell you something. That is the most highest honor I've ever received. It has become a very obviously big passion, i.e. this. And this summer, we're starting a summer arts camp that kids from all over the world have auditioned for. And we're doing a week of theater for kids. And I am so proud of this because if at some point in your life, you have to go, do I want to be remembered?
Yeah.
I mean, the Emmy is great and the Tony's wonderful, but how do you want to be remembered? What are you going to, Mark, are you going to, I sing a song called I Was Here. How do you want to look back? And it isn't until you get, well, for me, it was now in my 40s. I'm like, how do you want to be remembered? You know, I love being Glinda, but there's more to that. And so that's what I'm so proud of. I'm so proud of it.
It's like Kristen's boot camp, musical theater boot camp, right?
Yep.
Can people still sign up or you have everybody already?
No, we have not. Well, I think we have one more audition. I'm not even there.
Yeah.
I have my team. Yeah, my dad's on the board and he called me. I saw this kid in Texas. Boy, he's good, Kristen. You better put him in that camp. But it's cool because one kid I heard stole his daddy's pickup truck and drove from Texas to Oklahoma to audition, and his dad wouldn't let him be in it, you know. Yeah. And so we called the dad, and I said, "Hey, you know, let that kid come.
Yeah.
And if you want, you know, you should come see him perform. I don't know who you are, lady, but okay." So I said, "Get him in trouble for stealing your truck for sure, but don't let him not have this opportunity."
That's gorgeous.
I'm so happy.
Oh, I can't wait to see him. Now, if you do not have this, you need to get this. This is her coming home, which Kristen shot at her theater. It was on PBS. It is the most brilliant CD and the most brilliant DVD with lots of bonuses on this. I have been in this business for a long time and watched a lot of these. This is simply glorious. So if you have not seen this, now, you shot this, like you said, in your theater. Everybody in this house she knew, like you said, the pom-pom girls, everybody, your ex-boyfriends, everybody. What was this evening like doing this?
Oh, any opening night on Broadway, this it totally rivals it because, I mean, there's my mom right there. That's my mother. She's like, finally, I get to be on the cover of something. It's so funny.
More surreal the night as you look back?
Yes. Yes. My mentor, Florence Birdwell, who's now 90, is in the second row. And there's a whole Cantor Neb, My Coloring Book, which is one of my favorite songs on the planet. I do it. And there's a story, what I tell on here. I had sung it for a master class at OCU. And she said, I'm going to have to ask you not to do that song. And I was like, how come? Because you don't understand it. One day you'll understand it, and then I invite you to pick it back up and try it again. So I pulled it out. I had been doing it on tour because luckily now I understand the song. And I did it, and she's there, and the camera goes to her. And I said, have whatever reaction you want to have, Miss Birdwell, even if it's, and she had tears in her eyes, and she's like, she knew I got it. She knew I got it. But it's moments like that. There's a song called Fathers and Daughters about me and my dad. You know, There's a church. I have my high school choir come on. The ones now, not the ones I graduated with, because that would have been like five of us. And now there's 40. Thank you, Glee. They made that choir cool. But there's a Sandy Patty song called Upon This Rock that I do. And of course, there's Popular and all the, you know, Jerome Kern. I'm looking, everything I picked on here was for a reason. Little Sparrow, Dolly Parton. It's all heart of the matter, you know.
And there's piles of bonus tracks on here, too, but you did not see on the TV special on TV. So it's really a wonderful, wonderful piece of work.
I just want to say, again, following your voice thing.
Yeah.
See, I don't know if you see the cover, but it's my back, right? And the people that work for me, the team, I call them, they're like, no, it's not a good idea. You need to have your face on there. I'm like, no. The point is, I'm at home looking at the people. I had to fight to get this cover.
It's gorgeous.
I stand by it.
I'm mentioning one word, Glee. Glee fans? Yes. April Rhodes, right?
Yes.
Who is Matthew Morrison's ex-boozy flame, right?
From high school, yeah.
From high school. Working with Matthew Morrison, working on that show, playing her, singing Bacharach and David again on that. Talk about mashup songs.
I couldn't believe they. Ryan Murphy was like, you're going to do Maybe This Time and you're going to do Last Name by Carrie Underwood. I'm like, what? This is awesome.
Yeah. What was it like being on that show? Everybody, Jonathan Groff here the other day, and Jonathan said it's just magical to be on that show.
It is, because you can't believe it's happening. We were doing second season of Pushing Daisies, and Ryan Murphy, the creator of Glee, I had done a movie for him, which is now escaping me. Annette Bening, I played her lesbian lover.
Running with Scissors.
Thank you. Augustine Burroughs wrote it, right. So we had become friendly and close, and he said, there's a part I wrote for you. I want you to do it. It's April Rhodes. She was he looked up to her and liked her in high school. She was the star of every musical, and now she's disappeared, and we find her. She's drunk. Things didn't work out, and she's, what do you call it, squatting in people's apartment. Yeah, squatting. Yeah, exactly. Remember that? And so, and I was like, you want me to play a has-been drunk floozy who's squatting in a house? And he's like, yeah, just read the script. And I read it, and Glee hadn't aired yet. It was episode 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And I was like, you have to be an idiot not to take this part, Kristen. And so I would go over and do Pushing Daisies, finish, and go over and shoot Glee. Now, the cast, they're all like my little babies. So I love them. And Jonathan is included in that. There's nobody kinder in this world. Same with Matthew and Leah and Jenna and all of them. They're like my little nuggets. And I told them, this is going to blow up. It's either going to blow up or really tank. There's not going to be an in-between. So when it blows up, remember who you are. Don't go cray-cray. And I got to tell you, I was just there, what month are we in? April. So like, was it January or something? I came back for the 100th episode, and I keep in touch with a lot of the kids on a day-to-day basis, but I was so proud of how they were behaving and that they were still, you know, the same.
You know, Jonathan said it was interesting coming in as a guest star, because he said he's never seen a harder cast work harder, because they work 24/7. Like, you get the song, you learn it, you go to dance class in another room, then you shoot the thing. It's all very fast, one after another. The guest stars, it's a little easier for, right?
Yeah, because you come in, you do your 2 weeks. They're doing it all the time.
Yeah.
So when you wrap a scene, guess what? You're going to dance rehearsal, because next week you're shooting Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. Go! So they never stop.
But it probably made it a lot easier for you coming from a theater world, the musical theater world, where you're like, you know, between benefits and just, you know, learning really, really fast and saying, let's just go out there and do this now, or a new number going into a show.
Honestly, I think most of the kids were, theater people. So I don't know if I just challenge anybody to have that schedule. And, you know, I'm so glad that Ryan did it, because I think he single-handedly put choir on the map.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it is not. I grew up in Friday Night Lights. You did not be in choir. We didn't even have enough to be in choir. We had madrigals because there wasn't enough kids. So we had madrigals, and nobody auditioned for the school musical. So I was going to be a kid, of course. It was just not what you did. And people are like, why are you a cheerleader? Because that was my way to perform, people. I had no outlet. And of course, I was silent. I was, because I didn't want to hurt my voice. Easy. Back then, too. Anyway, yeah. Thank you, Ryan, for that, for Glee, and for American Horror Story. And
sure.
All the things, he's got coming.
Working with him as a film director, working with him on Running with Scissors that you did with Annette Bening.
I mean, he's up there in the top echelon of directors for me. I think a lot of actresses and actors feel that way. Personally, Annette Bening is one of my favorite actresses alive. So watching him work with somebody like her, who's a master, two masters at work, I just sat back and watched. And I remember that one scene, I think I had three scenes. One of the scenes, we had a book club, and my character's married, but I end up falling in love with her because she's kind to me. My character's name was Fran. And we're reading the book, and I'm just so in love with her, like falling in love with this person. And then I start to cry as I tell a story in the scene, and I cried every time. And Annette leaned over and said, "Camera editing on you. Don't be wasting those tears, girl. Because at the end of the night, we're going to turn around you. And that's when you got to have them." Such a good piece of advice, because I didn't understand dehydration, and I just didn't understand that I would be too tired. But it was such a good, like, when you get these opportunities to work with people like that, listen. Like, listen to them.
You've worked, you do big budget films, you do independent, you've worked with some amazing directors and some other brilliant stars. Who are your favorites that you've worked with? You mentioned Robin Williams before we came out here, who I know meant the world to you. That's RV was hilarious. That was an movie.
It's basically my family. I wasn't acting. I'm related to the person I played. I mean, Robin is, I say is because he still is for me. He is it. And he was a most generous actor. And all about the acting. There's this thing, right? You get Robin Williams, wacky, crazy. He's an actor, like true actor. And Juilliard trained, and, you know, just we had a fun time. We were on the set. All we did was laugh. Oh, I miss him. Jeff Daniels. Yeah. Cheryl Hines is one of my good friends of this day. You become a family because you cram it all in like 3 months in Canada. So you're not even in America, which I love Canadians, by the way. They're close to us, and I can relate. I can speak the language, but I really, you know, that's a big one. Yeah. That's a big one. Obviously, Matthew and I have done. We did Music Man together for ABC, and we did Deck the Halls, and we're close. You know, these are just wonderful little things that come along. I've had such good experiences in the film with people because I've gotten to learn. You know, there's people that I still admire from afar and think, oh, I hope I get to work with them one day. And I don't know. I think every time I do it is a learning thing.
Sure. The West Wing. Beautiful, right? West Wing. What was she like to play?
Annabeth Schott. So I am offered Wicked and I'm offered West Wing. I'm not kidding. Seriously. And I decided to do Wicked. And West Wing was a big old monstrosity hit, like year one or two. And, you know, it's Aaron Sorkin, you know. And do Wicked. It becomes what it's become. I moved to L.A. to do Bewitched. And Aaron's now off the show, and John Wells is running it. And I get an audition to play Annabeth. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, I'm so nervous, I hope. Because before, you know, there was a part, Ainsley, that they had, you know, and then now Annabeth, and I hope I can. So I went in, and she's supposed to know it all and be, you know, really smart about politics and stuff. Not me. And I had this big old long monologue, and I was like, you just better go in there and slam it. And I auditioned for that part. It was supposed to be 3 episodes, and it was 2 years.
Wow.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved The West Wing.
Do you remember your first episode?
Yes.
Because Stockard was here, and the role that she had was like a nothing role early on, and she was going to go on a hiking trip, and they said, get on this other plane, go to California. And she's on the set with Martin Sheen, and she's like, how long have we been married? They're like, go. He's like, you know, 20 years or whatever. She knew nothing about the relationship.
Are you
serious? No, she knew nothing. You know, we have kids. Oh, we have kids. Oh, wonderful.
Hello, child.
Let
nice
the
to
camera
meet you.
Roll. No, but that's how it was for her. So what was it like for you meeting this whole company on the West Wing?
Well, they had been together, remember, was it four years already?
Yeah.
3 or 4 years. And here comes little me.
Yeah.
Broadway girl, right? And they're like, okay. And my
Broadway
first
girl, I love it.
You know what I mean? That's what one of them called me. And Richard Schiff, my first scene was with him and the blonde Janelle Maloney. And I had a long speech. And it was in the media room. And basically I'm supposed to critique Richard Schiff. And I was so nervous. And they had been there all day and been hanging in, and I knew that I knew it. Cold. At the end of the day, you know, I was new, so I didn't speak. I didn't say very much because I felt like I was just the guest at that point. At the end of it, Richard, we were walking out, and he goes, "You're good." I said, "Thank you so much." He goes, "Don't, calm down. Just, you're good, and that's all I want to say." And I said, "Okay," because he's such a curmudgeon, but obviously I fell in love with him, as we all did, and I got to work with him a lot as I did with John Spencer. So, that was one of the best, most happiest times I've ever been in my life was doing that show. And it's one of those that you better be able to have the goods or you're going to get left at the train station. You know, like
that's what everybody says when you do those kind of shows. You got to have your stuff together. You just get on the set and you go.
It is no joke. I remember the first time I worked with Stockard and I was like maybe my third episode. Can I have to come in here and talk to her? I talked to her, the first lady, about being in the NASCAR, go to the NASCAR event, which I love NASCAR. So it wasn't hard for me to talk about NASCAR. So I'm a nervous wreck because it's Stockard Channing, Rizzo, my whole life. Like, it's Rizzo. And I'm like, get it out of your head. You know, and then I've seen everything she's ever done, so all of her films. And I just kept thinking, don't be nervous. Just try to be cool. Just stop it. Get out of your head. Stop being crazy. And here I'm trying to convince her to NASCAR. And like the first, the bell rings. We're done with like one little section. And she goes, "Oh, are you tired? I'm so tired." And it was just a small thing that made me feel at ease. Like, oh, she's just working. And now she's talking to me. And we became, obviously, friends. After then I said, okay, I just need to say this and then I'll never say it again. Oh my God. And I got down and worshiped at her feet, which is exactly what you should do when you meet her. And I'm proud to say I've helped her with hair and I don't know. I love her. And I've seen her twice now in the play.
Brilliant, right?
Shut up.
Oh yeah, totally. We have a few more minutes. So there are a few questions from the audience that I haven't asked you yet. What is something you know now that you wish you knew when you were starting out?
I sort of touched on it that I thought, oh, your talent will see you through. You know, it's all about the talent, your work. It is for sure. Sometimes it's just about politics. And sometimes no matter what you do or what you say, it ain't just not going to be. And it is not having to think. It is a business. It's literally, if you can imagine that it's been said, here's some of the things I've heard. Don't shoot her from behind, back fat. She's not going to get that part because she's not a big enough star. Too annoying voice. Lower it. Imagine anything that you can have said to you. It has been said. So that's why I was saying I have my own battles. Yeah. And I've just realized. And also, oh my gosh, you're wonderful. Bye. We really love you. You're just not going to do it. You're not going to get it. There's still that happening. When you think it's over, it is not over. You are just getting started. I wanted this one movie so bad. It's a very big movie, and I was up for it. I wanted it, and I felt like it was my part. It didn't go my way. And, you know, you find out later the reasons why. It has nothing to do with your talent. It has everything to do with friends. It's just the business. Accept it. Sometime your friend's going to be the director. Sometime you're going to be the one that it's going to work out for. Sometimes, you know, you just got spared a big, fat, cheesy bone. Thank goodness you're not in it. You know what I mean? So just realize it's a business and that your agents work for you.
Yeah. I love that. My final question for you is, what is the best bit of advice that you've been given, both personally and professionally, that you live by?
It's given to me by my dad. When I was a little girl, I was type A personality, still am. I know it's shocking, right? type A personality, perfectionist. Always been that way. That's why I love Dance Moms, because there's a little girl named Maddie who is exactly how I was. Can I do it again? My foot wasn't pointed. Can I do it again? You're just like, oh my God, that was you. So, it's just, don't sweat the small stuff. Don't sweat the small stuff. Life's so short. Again, I'm older. I get, you know, I'm in my 40s now. I've lived some, so I get it. Just don't sweat it. I mean, even when it just seems so sucky and bad and just effed up, just don't sweat it. Even in your relationships and friendships and, I mean, just don't sweat the small stuff. Life's too short. It goes by like that.
Yeah. I thank you for sitting with me tonight.
Thank you.
At the end of your 8-show week.
Are you kidding?
How much fun was this? This was the best. Ladies and gentlemen, Kristen.
Thank you for sitting here and listening to this. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for listening to the SAG-AFTRA Foundation's Conversations podcast. If you appreciated what you heard, please support us with a review or donation and reach out to us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @SAG-AFTRA Found. We'd love to hear from you.